Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode number 62 of the Tuesday Night Comics Podcast. I'm Billy, and with me, as always, is Dave.
Hey, guys.
And we're here to talk comic books, specifically new comic books that are coming out the week of March 11th. I can't believe it's March already.
I know. St. Patrick's Day is around the corner.
Yeah. St. Patrick's Day might be one of my least favorite holidays.
Oh,
mainly because I'm Irish.
Yeah, my sister's birthday is right around St. Patrick's Day, so we usually do a big birthday party for her.
That's really cool.
Around that time, and so like it's always been fun because I'm more associated with like her birthday / St. Patrick's Day and like
not, you know, amateur hour.
Right. Well, you know, sometimes, you know, it depends on who's invited over.
Right.
But sometimes it's a little bit amateur hour, but you know. For the most part, it's a good time. So this year, she's getting married, so she had her bridal shower this past weekend. So we had a bridal shower / birthday party weekend. So we just left out St. Patrick's Day this year.
I think that was the wise choice if you're going to leave anything out.
Yeah, bridal shower / St. Patrick's Day party sounds pretty trashy.
Now, what I am excited for are the new comics that are coming out this week, especially the comics coming out from one particular publisher.
What publisher is that, Billy?
All $20 in my 20 is Marvel Comics.
Oh, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah. What are they?
Well, we'll start off right off the bat with possibly my new favorite Marvel comic series, and that's Spider-Gwen number 2. I absolutely adored the first issue. I read some mixed reviews of issue number 1 online, so I was hesitant to read it, and I was a little late, you know, reading it after I bought it, but I thought it picked up from where Edge of Spider-Verse number 2 left off perfectly.
I could believe that. I didn't end up going back and reading Spider-Verse number 2.
Okay.
Yeah,
Edge of Spider-Verse number 2.
Edge of Spider-Verse number 2. So I only read Spider-Gwen number 1, and it does not read like a number 1, so I was a little lost.
I could see that. As I was reading it, and when you were saying last week that you were a little lost about things, I thought it was that you were a little lost about like Spider-Man trivia. But it really is that it kind of opens up on the second. It's basically the second issue of a series.
Yeah. It definitely read like that. Like, I was like, oh, what's going on here? And like, you know, it seemed pretty cool. Like, it seemed like it had like, you know, like Frank Castle's running the police department.
Right.
And like, it has like the cool tropes of like superhero alternate universe stuff where like, you know, Ben Grimm and the Yancey Street gangs in there. And like,
so
you just twists on different characters that are pretty cool. But I was a little lost, so I didn't really care for it too much, not because it was necessarily bad, but just because like I was like, this is not a first issue.
Yeah, no, I definitely get that. As I was reading it, I was like, especially the personal life stuff, not so much the Spider-Woman adventure with her fighting the Vulture. But
no, that was all like understandable, and like, right. I mean, it was somewhat understandable, but like there was no setup of who the characters were,
right.
Their relationships to each other, so there was a lot of like scratching my head moments.
I could definitely see that. Now, and then Spider-Gwen. What I like about this book so much is that it is the team from the Edge of Spider-Verse number 2 story who are continuing on with this series. They didn't bring somebody else in for it.
Right, which is why it probably reads so much like a number 2.
Yeah. Now my next book is Ms. Marvel number 13. I'm so excited that this book has been around for over a year now.
Yeah, that's right, because it doesn't do that like double issue shipping.
Right, yeah, this has just been shipping once a month and it's been fantastic like the entire ride.
Agreed.
And then I've got another series that I'm absolutely loving, which is the recently launched Star Wars number 3 from Marvel. This continues Jason Aaron and John Cassidy's run on the book. Amazingly, it has been shipping on time, despite John Cassidy doing the art.
Hmm.
You know, nothing against John Cassidy, but he can be a slow artist, kind of like Steve McNiven.
Now, are they doing these in, like, different arcs, like, you know, like, say, like, 1 through 5 is one story arc, and then the next story arc might be something that doesn't continue off of that?
Possibly. I'm not really sure. I'm guessing so. It seems, but I'm guessing that it will also take place around the same time period. I don't think we're going to see a lot of jumps, you know, in continuity and stuff, like, from one... Okay. From one movie to the other.
Right. I was wondering if they're, even though it's an ongoing series, if they're, you know, having it work like a mini where, like, you know, they're like, okay, almost all the artwork's in, we could start pushing this out.
Gotcha.
And they have, like, other stuff working at the same time. So second arc probably won't be John Cassidy, but, you know, I'm sure another, like, top talent, because that's what they're doing with these Star Wars books.
And, yeah.
And you'll get some more great art without, like, you know, shipping delays.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they're doing that. I feel like if you are, if you're a publisher and John Cassidy is the artist on your regular series, unless it has to be a John Cassidy book, I feel like having him switch out with another artist is just a good, you know, idea.
Right, right. That's like what DC Comics did when they hired Kevin Smith for Green Arrow. They announced it, and they're like, but we're not putting it out until he finishes everything.
I remember that. That was great. Because, you know, we've never seen the end of his, like, Daredevil, the Target miniseries from Marvel, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I think he said he would never finish it.
We finally got the end of his Spider-Man Black Cat series, which, like, the last two issues came out years and years after the first 5 did.
Which is funny, because I am just starting to read that now in the Marvel Unlimited app. It's like the issue number 1 is like where I am in, like, in continuity of, like, all the creators that I want to read from Marvel.
Gotcha.
So I'm like, this should be really interesting to read, because I'm reading it as, like, one big book. So yeah. How those, like, last 2 or 3 issues will read that, you know, jumped, you know, several years.
Yeah, no, definitely. And there's definitely a change in his writing style, I felt. Because I remember going back and reading the entire series just to make sense of those last 2 issues. And it definitely is that, you know, he's just coming at things from a different point of view so many years later.
Well, I started reading the first issue, and it dealt with heroin.
Yeah.
And I know Jay Muse, who plays Jay from Jay and Silent Bob, and one of Kevin Smith's best friends, had, like, a serious heroin addiction.
That's a good point.
I had listened to their Jay and Silent Bob Get Old podcast, which, right, I'm sure is still, like, going on, and basically it's, like, crazy stories of Jason Mewes' life that, you know, Kevin Smith interviews him, but, you know, they're friends, so it's just a conversation, really. But, you know, Kevin really talks about how, like, at a certain point, like, they pretty much wrote him off as dead, and, like, he couldn't, like, have him around his kid, and, like, it was pretty dark time. And all those podcasts, I think, are still up for free on iTunes, and I would totally suggest, like, the first 20 episodes of that podcast are great. After that, I felt like it got a little redundant in, like, you know, they were just Jay Muse crazy sex stories. You know, I can't speak for what's going on now, if they changed, you know, the format a little bit, but, like, that's where I kind of dropped off a little bit on that. But it was really interesting, and, like, you know, it was crazy sex stories on top of, like, just these, like, really, like, gut-wrenching stories about, like, what drug addiction can do to people. So I'm sure if it started in, like, a more lighthearted, and if he ended it around the time or just after, like, you know, he saw his friend almost die, you know.
Right.
It could take a dark twist.
Yeah. Yeah, and overall, I just wasn't a big fan of that comic either.
Yeah. Well, I'll let you guys know what I think when I finish it.
Too bad, because it's one of my favorite artists. Terry Donson does the art.
Oh, yeah, the art's gorgeous.
I mean. Yeah. Now, so I said Ms. Marvel, I said Spider-Gwen, Star Wars. Okay. The next is Spider-Man 2099 number 10, which continues his fight against the Maestro from issue number 9.
Hmm.
And again, like I said last time this book came out, Peter David co-created Spider-Man 2099. He co-created the Maestro. He's having these two creations of his battle it out. They're both from different dystopian futures. So I just think that's really fun. And finally, Howard the Duck number 1. I am such a sucker for Howard the Duck.
Oh, that's on my list too.
Nice. I even love like the long lamented movie as well.
Hmm.
Even though it's nowhere, you know, it's completely different from the Steve Gerber series. And it's probably like from a critical point of view, probably one of the worst movies George Lucas has ever made, including the Star Wars prequels. But I just absolutely love that movie. I've loved it since I was a kid.
I remember enjoying it when I was a kid. I haven't seen it since, and I barely remember it, but, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't seen it in many years, so who knows?
Right, yeah. So, you know, I have, like, fond memories of watching it on Channel 11 in New York.
Oh, that's funny. I owned it on I saw it in the theater when I was a kid, then owned it on VHS, and then later owned it on DVD.
Yeah. I'll leave it as fond memories, you know, as what everybody says, it's not great. So, like, I don't need to ruin those fond memories.
Yeah, but what I do like about this series is that Chip Zdarsky from Sex Criminals, who's the artist on Sex Criminals, the writer of this.
Right, that's actually what sold me on it. Like, you know, I don't think I read any of the Steve Gerber stuff,
right.
Which I've always heard is great, and I've read a couple of Steve Gerber's books, and I've enjoyed them. So I'm sure his Howard the Duck run is great, but yeah, that Chip Zdarsky, is that how you say it?
Yeah, I think it's Zdarsky.
Yeah, that he's writing it makes me go, oh, I want to see this could be funny.
Yeah, and the art on it should be gorgeous. You got Joe Quinones doing it.
Right, right. And what has he done before? I know the name, but I can't think of.
It's funny. I think he's somebody who's done. I can't think of anything off the top of my head, and I can't think of anything he's done recently. If I'm thinking of the right person, it's somebody who, you know, he's a guy who's had stuff before, but not, nothing that comes off the top of the head to me. I'm going to look him up on Comic Vine real quick while we're talking.
All right.
But yeah, this looks like it'll be a fun comic.
Cool.
Number one. He's worked on the Kelly Suda comic Captain Marvel series, Dark Avengers.
That's okay. Yeah.
A Star Wars Knight Errant for Dark Horse. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's got a great style, and I'm definitely looking forward to this. I think he's a good fit for this book.
Yeah. Also,
he's got like a good sense of humor about him too, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Also.
Sorry. That's it for my $20.
All right. Also for Marvel, I'm getting Fantastic Four number 644.
Now, is this the last issue?
No.
I'm going to keep asking this until we get to it.
Not the last issue. But working up to it, you know. You know, it'll get there eventually.
Yeah.
I feel like they announced the last issue like ages ago.
Right, and it's true. We've talked about this before. I think they announced it like in New York Comic Con, but like it's so long ago, and I keep thinking, okay, this series is now ending, but it's not.
Right, I feel like there's at least like 3 or 4 more issues.
That is a crazy cover. It looks like the thing is exploding.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it.
Yeah, and
it's been a good. Like,
unless it's shipping bi-weekly, there can only be 1 or 2 issues left.
It is shipping bi-weekly. Usually does. It seemed like it was shipping bi-weekly, and then it slowed down, and now it's going bi-weekly again for this last series. So I think we're going to, you know, we're going to see it, you know, finish in a little bit. So... Then I got, then after that, I have Justice League United by Jeff Lemire, number 10. So this is him wrapping up his Justice League United run.
Yeah, I had been picking up Justice League United, and I realized after a while that I wasn't actually reading it. So I stopped it around issue 5.
it's a pretty good read. I mean, I've been enjoying it. Whenever Mike McCone is not doing the art, I enjoy it less.
That makes sense, because I absolutely love his art.
Yeah. I'm going to grab World's Finest, number 32, by Paul Levitz. And this I used to tout as my least favorite Earth 2 book.
And now it's your most favorite?
It is, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think has it
gone up in quality, or have the other ones gone down?
Both, I think.
Ah, okay.
I think when it first started, like, he was kind of playing second fiddle to Earth 2 when James Robinson was playing. He was kind of, like, playing a waiting game, and you could almost read that in the stories. Like, even though they were, like, good stories, they weren't, like, you know, didn't feel like they were going anywhere.
Right.
And right now he's writing about, it's like a prequel to James Robinson's Earth 2, the start of Earth 2. So it's like the lead up to the Apocalypse War.
Gotcha. And that explosion that cost us Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been really great to, like, get some background on the characters. And, you know, he's a guy who's worked on the JSA for, like, you know, years in, like, the 70s and stuff. So he has, you know, I think a good handle on, like, a golden age type of style for those characters, much like James Robinson. The other, like, I'm also getting Earth 2 World's End, which has been, like, an interesting story, but also, like, not very Earth 2-ish. The last issue I read, they had, like, they mentioned Solomon Grundy being an avatar of the black.
Interesting.
Which he's an avatar of the gray.
Right.
It's like James Robinson did this, like, twist on, like, the Green Lanterns / Elementals in Earth 2 and combined them, and Solomon and Grundy was of the gray, and it just seems like there's just, like, some sloppy carelessness of, like...
Like the editors. And
the editors, the writers, like, you know, oh, yeah, that's the black, right? Because of the Black Lantern. But, like, so it kind of feels like there's not a lot of caring.
That's really sad, because Earth 2, for a while, was my favorite New 52 comic. Like, it was, and if not my absolute favorite, it was, you know, routinely in, like, the top three.
Right, because I think James Robinson did some great world building, and, like, a lot of this series is tearing it down, literally, like, by destroying the Earth, but it's also destroying it in ways where it's just like, oh, was it the gray? I don't know, it's the black, whatever.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of fans will talk about, like, things being insulting to fans, like, oh, yeah, they're taking a crap on my childhood, things like that. This actually, to me, is insulting to fans, and that it just seems like they don't care.
Yeah, yeah. I think on the Nerdist podcast, Chris Hardwick, like, talks about how when you see, like, creators care about something and get enthusiastic, like, people love that because it means, like, the thing that you're selling them, you're invested in too, and you like it too. But when you see that, you know, a creator's not invested in it, you kind of feel like you're being sold BS.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so, like, even though, like, the story's interesting, it doesn't feel like they care in some respects.
Gotcha.
So I'll be picking up Earth 2 World's End, but, you know.
And how does it look like the world is ending in Earth 2?
I think so. I think in Convergence, you're just going to have a handful of characters who make it through.
Interesting.
I don't know how that'll all pan out, but So what'd you read this week?
I read Spider-Gwen number 1, which, you know, absolutely loved it. And then I read that Axis trade paperback that I picked up as part of that like buy one get one free Marvel Digital promotion that they were running. So it wasn't the main Axis story, but it was Axis Hobgoblin and Axis Carnage. Axis Hobgoblin, totally worth it. Both of these are done with a really humorous take to these villains becoming good guys. Like something happens that reverses like the polarities of heroes and villains. If you'd say it shifts them on an axis, and I like as long as you accept that, then there's no problem like understanding these two miniseries. You don't need to read all of Axis. You could definitely just enjoy these two.
Right. It sounds kind of goofy. Like I've read that premise, and I'm like, so like good guys become bad, and bad guys become good, and yeah, and it sounds like such a DC Universe concept.
Oh, definitely. But
like, and not even recent DC Universe. I'm thinking like 80s and before, when there was not like a graying of the characters, which Marvel's had for like so long.
Well, that's what's really interesting about it, because it's not like especially the Hobgoblin book, it's not a Silver Age-y story. Mm-hmm. Hobgoblin still has his personality. Like, he's still a very cunning individual, but just uses it towards heroic ends now. So it's not like they made him all goody two-shoes. He's still kind of like a badass. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, instead of selling unused supervillain identities, which is what he was doing as a villain, he was basically like started a supervillain licensing program where he would take like third string villains who weren't being used and like license off their powers and costumes to people who wanted to be supervillains. He's now doing that with like third string superheroes.
So he's kind of like a low rent bankrupt Marvel.
Yes. And it's funny because like he's concerned with doing good, but he's primarily concerned with making money. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that hasn't changed about him. He doing good is first, but making money is second, and really maybe making money is first, but he won't be evil about it.
So who is Hobgoblin nowadays?
Hobgoblin is back to being the original Hobgoblin, Roderick Kingsley. Now, Hobgoblin has a very convoluted past.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to clarify, because I'm not up on my Hobgoblin lore.
So Hobgoblin, originally nobody knew the identity of Hobgoblin.
Right, I remember that.
Roger Stern was the writer. He was removed from Spider-Man before he could reveal who Hobgoblin was. Now, Peter David, then not knowing who Roger Stern had in mind, went through and came up with a plausible scenario that it was actually a reporter for the Daily Bugle named Ned Leeds. Hmm. So in Spider-Man versus Wolverine number 1 in the 1980s, it was revealed that Hobgoblin was Ned Leeds, who was immediately killed, and then the Hobgoblin identity was taken over by Jack-O-Lantern, who was named Jason McIndale. But then later on, now, are you following so far?
Well, can I just pause and just say, like, I love that this was like a Spider-Man story, and then like the reveal of it is in some random team-up book.
Well, actually, it wasn't a random team-up book. It was like a really big event, like that comic coming out. Like, because that was, I think, the first time Spider-Man had ever teamed up with Wolverine. Maybe he might have done it in a Marvel team-up, like where he teamed up with the rest of the X-Men. But this was the first time, because this was like before solo. Wolverine had like a solo title. Like he had
the
Frank Miller, Chris Claremont miniseries at this point, but not his own solo book.
Right.
So this was, all Spider-Man, all Wolverine, and at this point in, like, 1985,
like this was
those are Marvel's two biggest heroes. Yeah. So the crazy thing is that this major villain, Hobgoblin, is killed in, like, the first three pages of the book. And so basically, around the year 2000, it might have been a little earlier, maybe it was in, like,
the
late
2000.
Maybe it was the late 90s. In the late 90s. Marvel brings Roger Stern back and has him write this miniseries called Hobgoblin Lives, basically, which refutes what came before and goes back to Stern's original plan for Roderick Kingsley to be the Hobgoblin. I bought this when it came out because I was obsessed with the Hobgoblin as a kid, and I hated the miniseries because it involved side characters from like the 1980s who we haven't heard about since like 1987.
Oh, that's funny. Like, yeah, like that happens in like, I feel like Superman comics too, where they'll like add on like more people to like the Daily Planet bullpen. Or, like, you know, like, there was one story arc where, like, Perry White adopts a kid.
Oh, really?
And, like, he becomes, like he you see that he's, like, kind of, like, a sub-character. And, like, you know, no one really ever sticks around too much.
Right.
Like, the only person from the 90s who stuck around is Ron Troop.
And the thing is with, like, these Hobgoblin storyline characters, yeah, these were... Roderick Kingsley was like a fashion mogul, and he had a twin brother, and like it was very the whole Hobgoblin saga, when you look at it, is very Days of Our Lives, which is too bad because he's such a cool looking villain, and like such a like just bad villain too, you know, like to me he was like the Green Goblin improved, but
yeah,
disagree with that. But yeah, it's funny, they then reprinted that miniseries in a trade paperback called Hobgoblin Lives, and I think they included some material from the 80s, which made it read much more consistently, like just as like a preamble to it. So you're like, okay, like this caught you up, and then that comic made sense.
Oh.
Like you needed like a two-page text piece to like get you up and going.
Yes. You know what, I always, you know, like I... got to around, like, I knew that nobody knew who he was, and then, like, they revealed it later, and I never knew who he was, but in my head, I always pictured Norman Osborn as the Green Goblin and Harry Osborn as the Hobgoblin.
No, Harry Osborn was never the Hobgoblin. Back when McFarlane was on the book, and the second Hobgoblin, Jason McIndale, made it a deal during Inferno with one of the major demons.
Was that Armageddon Inferno with Wave Rider?
No, this was Inferno, the crossover that still holds up well. I said it. He basically became an actual demon. And so I believe in Amazing Spider-Man number 312, you have a Hobgoblin against a demonic Hobgoblin demonic Hobgoblin fighting Norman Osborn.
This sure sounds like it holds up well.
It does. It's it's Harry Osborn at the Green Goblin fighting this demonic Hobgoblin.
Okay.
And Spider-Man caught in the middle. And also, probably one of the best comic book covers of all time. I'm pretty sure that's Amazing Spider-Man 312. It might be Amazing Spider-Man 310. And I'm going to look this up right now. But yeah, I hope that that little Hobgoblin history, you know, sated your curiosity about the Hobgoblin. Yep, I was right the first time. It was Amazing Spider-Man 312.
Wow.
The original art for this, I believe, was put up for sale by Heritage Auctions, and they had it at New York Comic Con last year. And besides being gorgeous, it was also like $40,000 or $50,000.
Wow. Yeah,
just the cover.
Yeah, that was a good history.
Thank you.
And so is it Hobgoblin and Carnage, is that the series? Or
so it's two series that they basically combine into one trade paperback. The Carnage series is much more slapsticky. Like Hobgoblin keeps his personality. Carnage becomes almost like infantile, like trying to be good. But it is funny, like he ends up like being schooled in heroism by this Lois Lane type reporter, if like Lois Lane was, you know, very corrupt. But the most interesting thing about the Carnage miniseries.
So Superwoman from
sort of, but without powers. Okay. So like Lois Lane. A bitchier Lois Lane.
Okay.
But what this miniseries does is refute like Venom's reason for being. Because Eddie Brock, the original Venom, was basically discredited as a news photographer for doctoring photos during the mystery of who the Sin Eater was. The Sin Eater was this like vigilante who was most famous for killing Spider-Man's cop friend Gene DeWolf.
What I'm getting is that most Spider-Man comics in the 90s and 80s are about mysteries of who villains are.
Yeah, that's funny. Maybe. But Eddie Brock like doctored this photo to say who the Sin Eater was, and he was wrong. And then he was like basically booted out of the journalism profession. He was about to kill himself, and then the alien suit sensed his like hatred for Peter Parker or his despair, and they because the alien suit was living in that church at the time. And right. That's because of a whole other story that I'm not going to get into today, because we're doing enough Spider-Man history as it is. But in this Carnage miniseries, they refute, and it turns out that who Eddie Brock thought was the Sin Eater was actually the Sin Eater. And they do this as like a one-panel reveal and then just get back on with the story. And I'm like, wait a second. Like, this is huge.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like an aside. They're like, oh, my God. Eddie Brock was right. And then, like, back to, you know, whatever was going on in that issue. But they're both very funny. The Hobgoblin book is definitely the better of the two, though.
Cool.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, whenever I get there in Marvel Unlimited, because I'm definitely re-upping my subscription next year.
Nice. I'm glad you're liking it that much. Cause I know this was kind of like an experiment for you.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I shared on the podcast, but I totally was like, I think I'm going to do it. Like, I don't want to spend a lot of money. And then I was like, oh, you know, I've got a change jar. And I was like, I've got like about $100 in change, you know?
Right.
And I did.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so I went to like one of those like, you know, machines where you shake it all out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right. And then I got back like about like $100 and put it in my bank account, and I was like, boom. And I was like, and then I got like, you know, the Rocket Raccoon and a Guardians of the Galaxy comic that
yes.
I'm eventually going to sell on eBay. But
I really like that Rocket Raccoon figure because his mouth moves.
Yeah. So like, I was like, I just want to see if this is worth it. And it's totally worth it. And now I'm not buying as much Marvel comics. I still buy the James Robinson ones, but like, other than that, like, I'm just waiting to read them. And, I'm like, all right, well, so $100, that's, you know, I'm looking like, you know, we do the 20 each week, right?
Yeah.
And, like, that's basically what we spend in a month, so.
Yeah, and it's funny, that Marvel app is really just cutting into me buying comics because I tend to just buy comics as I'm ready to read them these days. But I just keep finding more things to read in that Marvel app.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I love that I'm getting to read all these things that I wanted to read, but never like, you know, like when you're a poor college student
or definitely.
Prior to that, you're like, well, I like this character and this is what I'm going to follow. And maybe at some point I'll read this other stuff, even though it looks really good, but I don't have the money for it.
Oh, definitely. I was describing Cerebus that way recently to somebody. I was like, I wish Cerebus was available like in my library, because that's a book I've always wanted to read, but I have no inclination, like no need to own it.
Right.
Yeah. That's cool. So, yeah, and then, and speaking of the Marvel Unlimited app, Dave, you got to read Death of Wolverine. Number one and two have been added, number one last week, number two this week, and Charles Sewell is just going through like Wolverine's history and like taking all these bits from all over the place and like just combining them into this like awesome Wolverine story.
You know, it's funny, when this was coming out, neither you or I bought it because Death of Wolverine just sounds like a marketing ploy.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm glad, I was telling you earlier today, I'm glad to hear that it's a good read because, you know, I enjoy Wolverine comics as much as the next guy, but you know, as soon as they get like, you know, hey, they're sticking Wolverine in here to boost sales, then you're like, oh, and that's what that title reads like.
Oh, definitely.
And that it's a great read, and I kind of had a suspicion it might be because everything I've read from Charles Sewell is great.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. I was like, man, I really shouldn't have doubted that this was going to be awesome, because I've liked everything I read from him.
Yeah.
If anything, it just makes me more excited to eventually read his Swamp Thing run. I'm holding out for a Swamp Thing sale.
me too. I'm excited to read like Jeff Lemire's run into Charles Soule's run, and because it just finished actually.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, the last issue came out like last week or the week before that, right?
I think it was last week.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then I'm trying to think. Oh, and did you ever read the Superman Earth 1 graphic novels?
I did. I read the first one quite a few years ago because it came out like right before the new movie came out, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense because it reads a lot like the Man of Steel movie. Not in, plot-wise, but even a little in the plot, but mostly in like the tone.
Yeah, it came out like a year before, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay. The villain in there was very Brainiac-like.
I thought the villain would be Brainiac, and then it was kind of this like Brainiac meets Lobo meets Archangel.
Yeah, and I don't know. J. Michael Straczynski, when I read interviews about it prior to reading, he's like, this is a villain unlike any other you've seen.
Oh, really?
And I was like, this is just Brainiac, just like twisted with a couple character traits of other people.
Right. Yeah, I didn't feel like the villain plot was anything really special, I found it interesting that he set up like who is really behind the death of Krypton kind of thing, which he doesn't go into at all in Volume 2. I thought Volume 2 was the better of the two.
Oh, you read 2 as well? Oh,
yeah.
I did not read 2 yet. I bought it in that sale that they had on Comixology. But I haven't read it yet.
Oh, 2 is really good. It definitely goes, like, what it reminded me of Man of Steel is that we're definitely getting a Jesus vibe from Superman. He gets, like, a hooker girlfriend. He's the man of the people. He's kind of, like, immaculately conceived since he comes from another world. But I think this is the first time he ever shared having a hooker girlfriend with Jesus.
Yeah. You know what? I'm just going to say, that's not really man of the people. Because, I mean, how many people do you know who's had a hooker girlfriend outside of Jesus, the Son of God?
That's true, but he's, not judging people based on, like, their occupation. His relationship with her is, like, the weirdest part of the second volume. The Parasite is the villain in the second volume, and that's awesome. The way they portray the Parasite is very creepy and cool. But, yeah, there's just, like, the way J. Michael Straczynski writes, I feel like he's trying to do his best, like, West Wing imitation or, like, his, like, very snappy banter back and forth with people. Mm. Like, something that Brian Michael Bendis does so well, but that it just seems a little off here. Like, especially when, like, Clark's girlfriend is, like, super into Rocky Horror Picture Show. And, like, just really will not shut up about Rocky Horror Picture Show. Like, after a while, you're like, oh, okay, we get it. You're really into Rocky Horror Picture Show. Okay, we get it. You really want to have sex with him on the first date. Like, she invites him over for dinner. She's wearing, like, low-cut jeans and, like, a camisole that reveals her, like, two tattoos on her abs. And is like, I'm going to go change it to something more comfortable. And comes out wearing, like, a sheer teddy and, like, bra and panties, and that's it. And this is like, oh, yeah, come over for dinner. And, it's like, come on, really?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes J. Michael Straczynski is so on.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he'll just be, like, way off.
Yeah, I just couldn't, like, I was like, oh, man, it just seems silly.
Yeah, I might read these. I might reread the first one and read the second one just because of this conversation, because now I'm interested.
It seems like he was going for, like, a cool atmosphere to it. The K-E-W-L cool.
Oh, the trying too hard cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, yes. Yes, I've read that several times. Oh, so is that all you read?
Yeah, that's. I think that's all I read. Let me just double check. So much. Usually I don't read this much in 1 week. Yeah, it's Superman. Yep, that was it for me. Oh, you know what? Actually, I take that back. I also read Secret Origins number 10, the Batgirl issue.
Oh, was that good?
It was good. You totally got your hooks in me because I went to Midtown Comics to pick up Spider-Gwen number 1, needed my blank variant cover. And I'm like, okay, after the Batgirl, Star Wars, and Spider-Gwen blank variant covers, I was like, I probably don't need any more blank variant covers this year until there are drawings on these comics. But while I was there, I was like, ooh, Dave was saying, old school Oracle Batgirl might be back, and this explains it, and it's not what we thought it was, but it definitely sets up a villain for Burnside Batgirl.
Huh, interesting.
Of her own making, yeah. And I don't want to reveal it to you because that's the major twist of the issue.
Right. I just picked up the Secret Origins from 2 months ago where it's a dollar cheaper on Comixology.
Right.
And that was Dick Grayson, which was a pretty good read. So I'll definitely get there.
It is an expensive comic, $5 an issue.
Well, yeah, and I think we brought up that it's ending soon, and no wonder.
Yeah, you do get 3 stories. That was easily the best story in the book. The art is not by Babs Tarr, but it's by somebody who the art style is similar. And then we get a Firestorm story from Dan Jurgens and Sean Chen, which I enjoyed more than I thought I would. Basically, just brings you up to date through the entire New 52 Firestorm series. If you wanted a cliff notes on the New 52 Firestorm, that's it for you right there.
That's kind of how the Animal Man was in Dick Grayson's Secret Origin. It was just it just pretty much summarized all of Jeff Lemire's run.
Yeah, and then there was a third story, which was a cool Poison Ivy story, which gave us nothing new about the character, but had some nice character moments and good art in it. If anything, it made her a little more of an anti-hero as opposed to a straight villain.
That's cool.
Yeah, and the best things about this issue, though, that there are no ads other than house ads, but there's a house ad for DC Direct is making a life-size mother box for you to buy.
Oh, I saw that.
And I was like, what? And it lights up different colors. I'm hoping it also pings. Yeah, features working lights and sounds. I'm just like, take my money right now.
You know, it would be awesome if they found a way that you could plug in or Bluetooth your cellular phone to that.
That actually would be awesome. Yeah, definitely.
And that way, you could use it as, a speaker or, then it would seem kind of, interactive.
Yeah, yeah. If it was even just a Bluetooth speaker, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I read Hawkeye number 1 this week.
Okay, I read that, too. I have a question for you. You read this on Comixology, right?
Yeah.
Were the pages all out of order and, doubled up?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I, complained about this to them today, because I just bought it this evening right before we recorded, read it, and I was like, what the hell is going on here? So I tweeted at Agent M, and he was like, oh, I didn't know about this. He's like, send it to Comixology support and, Marvel support, because it's both in the Marvel app and the Comixology app. They were messed up in both.
Oh, they're not supposed to read that way?
No. Like the repeated pages, yeah. Some things are out of order too, yeah.
That took away the coolest part of the book for me.
Oh wait, you thought that was cool? I thought it was incomprehensible.
Well, I'm used to reading Grant Morrison books.
It was supposed to jump back and forth between the present day and the past.
Right, and then they kept doing that, and then you'd reread pages, and I was like, is this? And I was thinking that it was a, time was looping in some way.
You definitely Grant Morrison'd it way too much. I've never used Grant Morrison as a verb, but yeah, you totally Grant Morrison'd that up completely.
And so I'm like, are these kids, spoiler alert, so at the end you see these carnival kids and like trapped inside this holding cell for Hydra. And I'm like, oh, are they messing with time? Is this going to tie into Secret War?
Right.
Wars? And yeah, so I thought it was a whole time jumping like loop that like they have to get out of, and I'm like, this is gonna be crazy.
No, the files just messed up.
Oh, son of a gun.
And the reason I realized it is because I was like they would have word balloons that would, you know, start on one page and lead into the next page, but they wouldn't line up with each other. So like Hawkeye would be saying something and then finish his sentence, and that sentence wouldn't make any sense. And then, like, the right. next page, like, that's where that sentence should
have been. That is totally what would happen in a Grant Morrison comic book.
That is true, but, yeah, no, this...
And so I was like, jumping back and forth. Like, I'm like, okay, all right, so read this. Like, you know, I was reading it like Multiversity's Charlton Heroes book, Pax Americana. Right. And I'm like, okay, so this is that, and then that's that, all right. And I'm like, okay, so what are they saying here? Like, I was totally reading into it.
That's really funny.
Even when they, like, in the Comixology app, they, like, redo the letter pages. I'm like, oh, that's so clever. Oh, man.
Yeah, I was like, and then, like, even in the present day, I'm like, wait. I'm like, okay, this kind of made sense. I'm like, oh, now this page goes back before the page 3 pages ago. And the pages, 2 pages after that is actually what's supposed to follow this one. Oh, and it turns out those 2 pages weren't even in the right order to begin with. And I'm like, ugh, this is so annoying. Yeah. And I can't believe that they've had this out there all week for, like, people to notice and complain about so that they could fix it. And I just don't know, like, what's going on.
Right. I wasn't sure if I was reading it wrong or not because I looked at some reviews because it was like, it didn't seem like it. I doubted myself in thinking that it was like a time story, like
right.
So like I looked at reviews and I was like, they don't say anything about it.
And like they might have been reading the print version. You know,
right, and I was like, oh, so I guess nobody's complaining about this. So, and yeah, so well.
Well, when did you buy your copy of it?
Today, actually, I read it at lunch.
So I wonder if it's because I bought it today too. Like I bought it this evening. And I wonder if it's just like this, somehow the file got corrupted like over the weekend or something. Mm. So most people who bought it on Wednesday, they were fine. But like if you're downloading it today, maybe they updated their system or something, you know?
Right. Yeah, that could be it. So, well, it is not a time travel story. So that's what made it like super cool for me. Like,
Did I just knock a star off all new Hawkeye number one for you?
I think you did.
That's really funny. You were like, oh, I love that they're taking this unique take on the superhero tropes by making us read the same page 3 times.
Yeah, I was like, wow, he's really doing something different here.
Yeah, no, just a bum file.
Yeah, oh man, that's pretty funny.
That is funny. But overall, I like the book. It seems the tone of this is definitely focusing on childhood more. It seems almost like the jump in tone between season 4 of Doctor Who, David Tennant's last season, and season 5 of Doctor Who when, you know, Matt Smith took over.
Oh, that's a really good comparison.
Yeah, because the tone of that show really switched to, like, the importance of childhood and children. And that seems to be the big thing here, focusing on, like, Hawkeye as an abused, you know, orphan, him and his brother, and then also this, they're saving a bunch of kids in the storyline, too.
Right, and I think it, like, you know, it's kind of mirroring his relationship as the older brother with Kate.
Right.
And, yeah, and I thought he was placing extra importance of that, like, in some of the pages that, like, were repeated. So my love of Grant Morrison could be...
has, like, clouded you for, like, reading other things.
Or it could just be repeated in a glitch of a download. So right. So does that just tear down Grant Morrison?
That's really a good point. Like, did we just pull the curtain back on Grant Morrison? That it's kind of like if you take a million monkeys and give them typewriters, like one of them will, or an infinite number of monkeys and give them typewriters, one of them will write Romeo and Juliet. Somehow, through an infinite number of computer files, this one glitch has produced a Grant Morrison-esque comic.
Yeah. So,
Yeah.
but I mean, I enjoyed the story despite that little hook. That I was like, oh, this is really interesting.
Yeah, you actually enjoyed it because of it.
Well, you know what? I feel like I was reading it quickly, but then like I like stopped and it made me go back and read it a little more and like look at it a little more. So thanks, Comixology, and your download glitch.
Yeah. Yeah, and they actually have sent me a direct message back. They were like, oh, we actually haven't seen this glitch before. And then asked me to fill out like a feedback form. So yeah, if you want to jump on Twitter and jump on my tweet and be like, hey, I'm having the same issue. Although I didn't know it was an issue.
Wow. Well, we should say how I like that glitch a lot.
That's really funny. Now my only question with this is Ramon Perez did the art, right?
Right.
Did he do both the flashback scenes and the present day stuff? Because it was like
two different
art styles, but it was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, it was him both times.
And he does a good job of keeping David Aja's like a similar style to him for this series.
Yeah, it's simplified.
Yeah, yeah. So something tells me I'll be picking this book up every month.
Yeah. I also read Dissenter by Jeff Lemire and Dustin Nguyen.
It's a Jeff Lemire week for you.
Yeah.
How was it?
It was good. I liked it a lot. It set up the setup was really cool. It takes place in the future. There's some time jumps that were definitely in story and explained.
Not just glitches on Comixology.
Right, right. But it focuses on AI and what AI can do, and you know, with all the talk of the singularity and all that kind of stuff, and how technology is rapidly advancing. It's a really interesting story, and the artwork's gorgeous. And I definitely suggest everybody pick it up.
Nice. Yeah, I gotta check that out. I do love the two of them, so I am excited to read that.
Yeah. I also picked up Never Boy Number One by Sean Simon and Tyler Jenkins.
And that's from Dark Horse, right?
Right. And it was really cool. It was about a guy, or it is about a guy, who Never Boy, who is he's an imaginary friend. And spoiler alert, his childhood friend dies, and he's been using real-world drugs to stay in the real world. And some people can see him and some people can't. And he's starting to manifest like other imaginary friends of his making.
Right.
And there are these like imaginary friend cops after him because he's breaking rules.
Yeah, crazy.
So it was a really good story.
Sounds like Sleepwalker. I'm just kidding.
I was like, Sleepwalker. Fantastic Four is Sleepwalker.
Yeah, Fantastic Four is Sleepwalker.
And and then after that I read Lady Killer 3, which was a good book, but you could kind of see it coming.
Okay, yeah, I didn't get a chance to read that yet. I absolutely loved the first two, but I plan on reading that this week.
I think, you know, I often talk about like reading books, you know, in one big swoop and how that's great. And like, this story is good, but like, I feel like if you read it all together, it would just be another chapter and you would say, oh, okay, like, this is where it's progressing and get right on to the next chapter. But with it being its own issue, I kind of was like, okay, this is what I knew was going to happen.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah.
There wasn't a lot of satisfaction, but it needed to happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying. Like the overall, where this issue is going based on the cliffhanger of the second issue, I'm guessing I could kind of predict what happens, you know, this issue. If not every beat, then like the general story.
But right.
At least
the
direction the arrow is shot in.
Yeah, yeah. So, I read Justice League 3000, number 13, which just dropped to $1.99 on Comixology, and that was the first appearance of Ice in the future. And
gotcha. So that was one issue after the Booster Gold Blue Beetle reappearance, right?
Right. Nice. And so that was really cool. I really enjoyed that issue, and she appeared, but she's got a different origin than Blue Beetle and Booster Gold in this series, as well as the Justice League. So the Justice League are people who have been
cloned.
No, they're like if you or I, they like got their DNA rewritten to be Superman.
Ah, gotcha.
But it wasn't perfect, so some of their original personality still stays there.
Gotcha.
And Booster and Beetle time traveled, and Ice is immortal.
Oh, interesting.
So it was a pretty cool read. And the last thing I read was Joe Hill's The Cape, 1969, which I talked about The Cape last week, and this is a prequel to that.
Okay, cool. And how did this tie into the original series?
You learn how the character who has the cape acquired the cape and how the cape got its magic.
Oh, cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, so it was a good read. And that's it. That's all I read.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, so that's it for reviews. Let's talk about some comic news that came out. First, we got an Age of Ultron trailer that has, like, blown up the internet in ways that even Kim Kardashian can't.
it was a great trailer. A lot of it we've seen before, but I think the first half and the last bit are new.
Yes, very true.
And you get to see Vision a little bit for the first
time. Yeah, because people are asking me, they're like, who's this Vision guy?
Yeah, and that's exciting. And Ultron's really creepy.
Yeah. Ultron is super creepy in this movie, or like looks like he's going to be. I can't wait for it.
Yeah.
You know, this Age of Ultron can't get here soon enough.
Right.
And I noticed that Marvel's putting out an original graphic novel. I thought they had given up on this after Family Business and Avengers: Endless Warfare, just because we haven't heard about any more new ones coming out. But
is it Avengers All in the Family?
No, it's Avengers: Rage of Ultron. And it's coming out just in time for the movie.
Mm.
And but the team is Rick Remender and Jerome Acuna, I believe.
At least they're getting like solid teams on these.
Oh, definitely. And those are two guys who have like worked together before, so you know. So that's like a power team putting together.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome. I actually read today this article about wanting Tobey Maguire to be Spider-Man again.
Really? I wonder if he would even do it. He seems so sick of it by Spider-Man 3.
Yeah, well, I mean, Spider-Man 3 was not good.
That's true.
I wonder if it was just like part of like bad reviews that he was sick of it.
But I remember him having to like do press before the movie came out, and he just like all three of the main stars of that, him, what's her name, Kirsten Dunst, and the guy who played Harry Osborn.
I know who you're talking about. Pineapple Express guy, right?
Right, exactly. I don't know why I'm blanking on his name. Yeah. But they, like, every interview I saw with them, they all just seemed so over it. There was no excitement. They just seemed like dead to the world. James Franco.
James Franco, yeah.
And I can't see him wanting to go back to it. Especially because he seemed very much in Raimi's camp. I think when they got rid of Raimi first, and he was, I thought he was like, you know, if Raimi isn't involved, I'm not doing the movie either.
Did you listen to the Sam Raimi interview on Nerdist?
No, I haven't.
Oh, he was not a fan of what became of Spider-Man 3, and he was like, I should have stuck to my guns.
Yeah, because Marvel got heavily involved. They were the ones who pushed having, you know, three villains in it. He didn't want that at first.
Yeah. So the guy's article was kind of, I don't know if he made a great case, but basically he was saying that, you know, Spider-Man 1 and 2 are far superior than the Amazing Spider-Man movies that have been released.
Yeah, I'll definitely give
more
that.
Recently, and that's a good start to the case. But that's pretty much all his case was, and that the only other good point he made was that Amazing Spider-Man or Spider-Man number 3 did not destroy the character. It wasn't a good movie, but it didn't ruin anything.
But that the same could be said for Amazing Spider-Man 2. I thought Andrew Garfield was the better Peter Parker, just in the worser movies.
Right, right. So what I was, and he said he liked Gwen Stacy in the Amazing Spider-Man movies, which he kind of wishes would have, you know, developed in the Spider-Man movies that Raimi had created, right. Which then creates like Peter Parker possibly cheating on his wife.
Oh, wow. But he wasn't married in the Raimi movies.
Yeah, he was.
He was?
Yeah, I'm almost positive.
I did not remember that at all. Did that happen in Spider-Man 3?
I thought it happened in Spider-Man 2.
No.
Oh, maybe.
No,
maybe.
Definitely not. They break up in Spider-Man 2 for a good chunk of the movie.
Does she like leave somebody and then come running home to Peter?
Yeah, yeah, she almost gets married to
maybe
James.
That's what I'm remembering.
Okay, I was like, what are you talking about?
But all right, so never mind. That was a that criticism of his argument is invalid. but what I was thinking was like, oh, I like this in the way that like if you add Peter Parker to the Avengers movie, or Captain America, whatever, you insert him. And people are like, oh, this is adult Peter Parker.
Right.
Who, you know, was Peter Parker in those earlier Spider-Man movies. And he's, you know, fighting alongside everybody. And if he dies, that's like kind of a you know, and then you bring in Miles Morales.
Mm.
You get like the best of both worlds.
Oh, okay, I could see what you're saying there.
And then you could, you know, you don't have to be like, oh, let's do another Spider-Man movie and redo his origin.
Right. Yeah. That's it. Like, I really just hope that with these, with Spider-Man coming to Marvel Cinematic Universe, that they don't do another Spider-Man origin story and another please do not make the Green Goblin the villain in this movie.
Right, right. Yeah, it's just rehashing. Like,
right. We've been to that well so many times. I was talking to somebody about that recently, and they were like, but that's his arch villain. And I was like, yeah, but the Joker isn't like in every Batman movie, and
right.
Lex Luthor, I guess, is in most of the Christopher Reeve Superman movies, but it doesn't have to be in every Superman story.
But I think you have the same problems with Spider-Man as you do with Superman, in that like they keep being like, but it's Lex Luthor, and you're like, but how come no one's done the Parasite?
Right.
Or
it's like Lex Luthor's the household name. It's funny though, like Lex Luthor has been Superman's main villain for over 50 years. Well, the Green Goblin died in the late 1970s, and for a long time there was no Green Goblin. You know, it was the Hobgoblin. Harry came back for a little bit as the Green Goblin, so the goblins were always in there, but it wasn't until like Ultimate Spider-Man comic came out and the Raimi Spider-Man movie that like they really forced home Green Goblin as the main villain.
Yeah.
You know, even back, like back in Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Green Goblin was, like, the number one villain. But in the 90s Spider-Man cartoon, I don't think he was. I think it was the Kingpin more than anything.
Yeah, I agree.
With, like, Venom in there, too, just because, you know, Venom was so cool at the time.
Right. But speaking of Superman villains, the Supergirl series on CBS has casted Toyman.
Ooh, that's exciting.
And I'm really excited about that because I love Toyman, and I think this is like an underused Superman character who is somewhat like his Joker, but never realized to that full extent.
Okay, yeah, I could see that because he's definitely baddie.
Yeah, and I feel like the storyline in the like early to late 90s or sometime in the 90s of Winslow Scott, aka Toyman, killing Cat Grant's son,
right,
really like drove that home.
Yeah,
like, this guy's like a lunatic and he's just demented.
Yeah, he went from like creepy villain to scary villain very quickly.
Right, yeah, like, and with them saying that Cat Grant's going to be in the series, and now they cast the Toyman, like, I think they might be, like, pulling from that, which is exciting, because I feel like...
Things are looking good for Cat Grant's son all over again.
Right, so, but I like that they're pulling from that, because that's, like, definitely something that Sterling Gates and... Jamal Igel revisited in their Supergirl run, and they used Cat Grant a lot and Toyman as well. So like, I think that I hope they pull from their run of Supergirl because I thought it was a great take on Supergirl, and so was that story of Toyman, and I think that was the best version of Toyman where he was like a creepy, you know. Character,
yeah.
You know,
my favorite version of Toyman, I think, will always be in the Alan Moore "Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow," where him and the prankster team up, and that's where I feel like the creepy, murderous Toyman like comes from.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, so they also debuted Supergirl's new costume,
which looks awesome.
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, it looks like. It takes notes from the Man of Steel movie.
Definitely.
In its color palette and its textures. But, like, they don't overly sexualize Supergirl. And I feel like that's a trend in a lot of comics. Mm. And I'm glad that they did not do that on this TV show.
Yeah, it looks like a very classic Supergirl comic costume, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah, I agree. Like, very high boots. And a skirt that's, you know, decently long, and she's wearing stockings instead of bare legs.
Right.
And I've seen criticism that it's a muted color palette, and I think I was telling you earlier this week that, like, you know, that seems like a DC character complaint.
Yeah, I saw the same criticisms that it was a muted color palette and that the yellow wasn't in the S shield on her chest. And that's, you know, like, yeah, that's kind of what the DC live action stuff is. They do go for darker colors.
But I feel like so does Marvel, but you don't get those criticisms. Like, nobody was like, Thor's cape should be redder and he should be a light blue, you know?
That's true, but maybe... I feel like the DC costumes are definitely darker, though. Like, the Spider-Man movie costume is definitely darker than they are in the comic costumes. Not as much, you know, primary color.
Right.
But I think if you were to put, like, the Amazing Spider-Man 2 suit next to the Man of Steel suit, the red and blue in the Spider-Man costume would definitely come off as brighter.
I agree. But I feel like if you put Captain America next to Superman, they'd be in the same palette.
Definitely in Winter Soldier, maybe not in the first movie, but yeah. But then if you take Iron Man and you put him next to any of the DC superheroes, he's going to be like shining like a flashlight, because that's like really red and like really gold.
Yeah, but it's still a maroon. It doesn't get to the red.
It's a maroon, but it's a really bright maroon.
It's a maroon, but it's metallic.
Yeah, it's high gloss.
It can't not be metallic.
That's fair. No, you could put like you put like enamel on there.
I'm Iron Man with a matte finish.
Yeah, I'm Iron Man with a wooden finish.
Yeah. Speaking of wood, Groot is getting his own series.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm very excited for that. That was very fun news to read last week.
Yeah, by Jeff Loveness and illustrated by Brian Kessinger.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with Jeff Loveness, you probably wouldn't, because he's not a comic book writer. He's a writer for Jimmy Kimmel.
Right.
So that makes me think that this series will be very humorous.
And, you know, when I saw this come in on my newsfeed, I just saw Jeff, and I was like, oh, man, if Jeff Lemire is writing and drawing this, it would be so amazing, because I think Jeff Lemire drawing Groot, would be, like, gorgeous, because just of his inking style would be, like, awesome for, like, a wood creature, like
Groot. Especially if in his writing he was using his new, like, all of time is jumbled up, you know.
Where am I in the branches of time?
The branches of time, well done. Yeah. No Jeff Lemire, which is, I know, always your first choice of Jeffs for comic books.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he actually overtook Geoff Johns for me.
Oh, wow. That's funny. I don't even consider them both Jeffs, like, just because Geoff Johns is kind of like a Geoff.
Like Geoffrey the giraffe?
Right, exactly. Just like Geoffrey the giraffe. In my head, Jeff, spelled J-E-F-F, and Jeff, spelled G-E-O-F-F, pronounced two very subtly but very distinctly different ways.
So, like, Geoff Johns.
No, I don't say it like that. I say Geoff Johns. But in my head, I never think that his name would be spelled J-E-F-F. It's different. You really have to have an ear for it, Dave. That's all I'm saying.
And the last bit of DC news is that DC team show, they put out a casting call. For the three characters that they have not named. And this is going to be a spinoff of Arrow and Flash.
So what do you think this is?
We talked about it last week that the Atom, Firestorm, and...
the kind of Suicide Squad-esque show that they're doing. That's not going to be the Suicide Squad.
Yes. And so it's Atom, Firestorm, Canary, and Captain Cold.
Gotcha.
And so they said there's going to be three characters that you've not seen before. And they gave descriptions for each of these characters in this casting call. And one of them is called the Traveler, and he's described as a Han Solo-esque rogue who gets by with his charm. This hero hails from the future and has journeyed back in time on a secret mission. His razor-sharp wit hides the pain of a man who has lived through serious conflict. He also harbors many secrets, always leaving both his teammates and the audience unsure of his true allegiances.
Ooh.
So I think this sounds like Rip Hunter.
Oh, definitely. I was thinking Booster Gold, but Rip Hunter makes more sense.
Right. If it's not Rip Hunter, it's a Booster Gold that's a little bit more like Rip Hunter.
Right. Like they took things from both their personalities.
Right. And the next one is the Female Warrior. This 20-something Latina is pretty but unassuming. Book smart and socially awkward by day, but at night... she hears the cry of battle. Her fury is ignited, and she becomes a fierce warrior. So much so that sometimes she can become a threat to others.
Interesting. So is this Fury or is this Vixen? Or is this neither?
I would guess maybe Fury.
Gotcha. Not Nick Fury, to anyone who's listening who's not a DC Comics fan.
Fury, also known as Helena Cosmatos, I think it was. She's an Amazon who is powered by the ancient Furies of Greek myth.
Right.
So I was thinking it could be her. It would be a way of expanding the Amazonian mythos in TV without getting into Wonder Woman.
Oh, that's a good point.
They could do the same thing with Grace from the Outsiders, who was of Asian descent and but was also an Amazon.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so then when
I didn't read that out, so how they could put in Bloodlines characters into the show.
But yeah, I was like, Grace. I was like, I could see the Grace and Fury. And then I was like, I want to see a TV show called Grace and Fury.
Not Grace Under Fire. Oh, wait, that's something else. Would it star Blair Underwood? Blair something? Not, definitely not Blair Underwood.
So I think it could be Fury, but I also think it could be Rose and Thorn.
Oh, okay. Yeah, now we're talking obscure DC characters who I have a better handle on.
Yeah, well, she's a character who's like bookish by day. I think she's a librarian, and then at night she becomes a superhero, and she's got a split personality disorder.
Yeah, but it's the same person, right? It's not like a set of twins.
Right, right.
Which confused me about Rose and Thorn the first time I read a Rose and Thorn comic. But I blame that more on the creative team than anything else.
Yeah, yeah. And then the last one is an African-American male in his 20s will fill the role of a regular street-smart guy who unexpectedly gains powers, and then as part of the team regularly quips about the insanity of situations.
Is this Static Shock?
I would have guessed Static Shock, but he has his own web series coming out.
Gotcha.
So I would guess more Black Lightning.
Oh, okay. This is the one that you are going to audition for, right?
Yes, yes. I don't mind the I like the time travel hero.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like the woman and the man, the African American here, they both have like bad stereotypes working with them.
In what sense?
In that, like, the woman is, like, she's, you know, a little bookish, but really, she's a woman who can't control her feelings.
Gotcha.
And then she becomes a furious person, you know, like,
right.
And that seems a little bit like, you know.
Women are crazy.
Yeah.
I'm not actually saying women are crazy. I was just saying what Dave was saying.
Right, right. That I think women, I mean, that yeah, they that, think women are crazy.
That Dave thinks women are crazy.
And then the African-American, let me just reread the African-American male, and I'll hit some, like, you know, some things. An African-American male in his 20s will fill the role of a regular street-smart guy who unexpectedly gains powers and then as part of the team regularly quips about the insanity of the situation. Because, you know, as opposed to white people, he can't grasp having powers and craziness.
I'm not going near that with a 10-foot pole, I don't think.
Right. So, obviously, this, like, the two descriptions just sound a little bit stereotypical. I mean, I hope whatever happens with these characters is that they're fleshed out and don't sound as one note as these descriptions make them. But but I mean, if we got, you know, Rose and Thorn or Fury or Black Lightning and Rip Hunter on this team with Adam, Firestorm, Canary, and Captain Cold, that's pretty cool. I mean, who would have expected that, you know?
I definitely would have. I would wonder how long that series would last.
Right, right. In the comics, it wouldn't. But on the maybe.
Yeah, maybe, if they make it cool.
Yeah.
That is funny, though. Like, this would be kind of cool if we took these, like, DC, like, we're talking D-listers here when you get to Rose and Thorn.
Right, yeah.
You know, but I don't even know what to think of that. Like, that's just craziness.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we'll see who it ends up being, but, you know, I'm very interested to see where this goes.
Yeah. And I feel as if, like, almost they are playing, like, right up to you. They were like, how can we get Dave excited about this show without actually involving, like, Justice Society characters?
They're like Rose and Thorn, Black Lightning, and Rip Hunter.
Yeah, let's go obscure. Okay, how about somebody, how about, like, Hitman? No, more obscure. How about Hawk and Dove? No, still too much of a household name. Rose and Thorn, who? Yes, exactly.
Yes, has she had maybe one or two miniseries that were really low in sales?
Maybe a fifth week special?
Fifth week specials. Nice callback from last week, I think, right?
Thank you, yeah. All right, and so that's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of Tuesday Night Comics. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this episode as much as we enjoyed making it, and if you don't mind, head over to iTunes, hit that subscribe button, make sure you never miss an episode, and also, leave us a review on iTunes. We'd love to hear what people think of the show.
Yeah. As long as you're not a woman in her crazy, you know, nighttime persona.
Actually, no, I welcome that. I welcome reviews from all people, whether you're daytime and bookish or nighttime and crazy. Whether you are a rose or a thorn. Because every rose has its thorn, as Poison once told us. Thank you, and have a great Tuesday night, everyone.